Good afternoon for WRCO News. I'm Joanne Krulatz. The Wisconsin legislature is unlikely to step in once federal funding for food share runs out because of the shutdown. Wisconsin administers some $114 million in federally funded food share benefits for 700,000 people. State Senate President Republican Mary Falskowski on WISN's Upfront.
$114 million is a lot of money, and my heart goes out to people. But this is a federal issue, and I don't see the state having the resources to do that.
But Feeding Wisconsin Executive Director Jackie Anderson points to the state's nearly $2 billion rainy day fund and more than $4 billion surplus.
So the funding is there if we choose to actually implement that and use some of it to help these SNAP folks.
Anderson says there is important information for Wisconsin food share recipients.
We're really trying to get the word out that if you have a SNAP balance from October, you absolutely can use that in the month of November. There was a lot of confusion around that, and many people were trying to use their SNAP benefits or, you know, trying to stock up. And just know that if you have a balance, it is available through November. You will be able to use that.
The federal SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, helps individuals and families buy food. It aids 700,000 people in Wisconsin, including 300,000 children, and is known here as Food Share. The federal USDA funding will be unavailable in November if the shutdown continues. Some Wisconsinites' health care premiums could skyrocket by $30,000 a year if Congress doesn't continue the insurance tax subsidies, one of the biggest sticking points of the government shutdown. Savannah Tomey Olson reports.
People who buy health insurance through the healthcare.gov marketplace can qualify for what are essentially discounts on their insurance to make it more affordable. Those discounts are set to expire at the end of the year, which would make healthcare coverage more expensive for up to 42 million Americans. Here in Wisconsin, about 313,000 people have plans they bought on the marketplace, and 88% of those qualify for some sort of tax credit. On average, those tax credits save Wisconsinites $664 a month. But leaders say costs will surge for some people. Governor Tony Evers.
A middle-class family of four in Wausau see their premium more than double, going from $886 a month to over $2,300 a month. 60-year-old couple in Rice Lake, making about $85,000 a year, could see their premium rocket 800%. That's an annual increase of over $30,000 in costs.
And that's just for the premiums to have insurance before even thinking about things like filling prescriptions or going to the ER. Democrats in Congress say they will not agree to end the shutdown unless the tax credits will continue. Republicans have said they would consider extending the tax credits after reopening the government. Milwaukee Congresswoman Gwen Moore.
We're going to see families like this take some risks and simply drop their coverage and just cross their fingers and pray. Maybe we could just get by and show up in the emergency room if something really goes bad.
Data shows when healthcare systems, the government, and charities have to absorb the costs of the uninsured, prices go up for everyone. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
A federal judge has ruled that the Trump administration must release millions in grants meant to address the shortage of mental health workers in schools. Congress funded the grant program after the 2022 school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. The grants aim to help schools hire more counselors, psychologists, and social workers, focusing on rural and underserved areas. The ruling applies only to some grantees in 16 Democratic-led states that challenged the decision. The Education Department under President Biden initially awarded the grants, prioritizing diversity. The ruling will remain in effect while the case proceeds. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin has resumed offering abortions after a nearly month-long pause due to federal Medicaid funding cuts in President Donald Trump's tax and spending bill that took effect at the beginning of October. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin said it was able to resume offering abortions as of noon Monday because it relinquished its status as an essential community provider. The organization says by doing that, it no longer fits the definition of a prohibited entity under the federal law and can receive Medicaid funds. Abortion funding has been under attack across the U.S., particularly for Planned Parenthood affiliates, which are the biggest provider. State Senator LaTanya Johnson is introducing legislation that would allow communities to require stricter fire safety standards in apartments and rentals. The Milwaukee Democrat says older, cheaper rentals aren't currently required to have sprinklers and other fire safety systems.
People living in these buildings don't get to choose whether their apartments have modern fire protection. They just pay their rent in the places that they can afford to live and hope for the best.
Current state law allows for older buildings to pass inspection without fire control systems. Johnson says that sort of lax standard led to a deadly Milwaukee fire this spring that killed 5 people and displaced 100. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is asking you to check fire danger before conducting outdoor burning activities as the fall fire season is underway. Over 50 wildfires have occurred in the month of October alone, burning approximately 20 acres. Though small in size, nearly all of these fires were human-caused and preventable. After missing out on some typical September and early October rainfall, the U.S. Drought Monitor shows that most of Wisconsin is experiencing abnormally dry conditions. Some areas are even in a moderate drought. Dry weather, gusty winds, and a lack of precipitation can increase fire activity. Concerns over elevated fire danger will continue until significant precipitation in the form of rain or snow occurs. The DNR will be staffing fire equipment as conditions persist. The DNR recommends avoiding conducting any debris burning until the ground is completely snow-covered. Wildfires can happen any time of the year when the ground is not completely snow-covered. Areas are especially vulnerable in the early spring and again in the fall after the leaves have fallen from the trees and the plants and grasses go dormant before winter. Burning brush and leaf piles is the main cause of wildfires at this time of year, and debris burning remains the number one overall cause in Wisconsin. Sparks from recreational equipment, campfires, and hot ashes from fireplaces are also contributing causes. Smoldering embers can remain hot for days, even weeks. If using a wood stove or fireplace, empty the ashes into a metal container with a tight-fitting lid or dump them onto bare soil. Then drown the ashes with water and stir until the embers are completely cold. The same goes for campfires, burn barrels, and burn leaf and brush piles. Before leaving the area, drown the ashes, stir, and keep adding water until all heat and smoke are gone. Check current fire danger, wildfire reports, and burning restrictions on the DNR's website. The Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is reminding farmers and manure applicators to check the runoff risk advisory forecast before spreading manure on fields. This tool helps determine the potential for manure runoff from a field depending on weather conditions and soil temperature. The runoff risk advisory forecast includes maps showing short-term runoff risk for manure application. The maps account for soil saturation, temperature, and precipitation on a scale of 1.5 square mile grids. The risk maps are updated 4 times daily with the latest information from the National Weather Service. Users can access this tool at runoffriskadvisory.wi.gov. Farmers should contact their crop consultant or county land conservation office for help identifying alternatives to high-risk spreading. Larger farms with a Wisconsin Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit can also reach out to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. These professionals can help identify fields where the risk is lower and alternative practices such as stacking manure in a safe location. DATCAP also reminds manure haulers and drivers to put safety first when traveling on roadways in order to avoid spilling manure, prevent injuries, and protect the health of people and the environment. All agriculture and livestock operations must report spills or runoff that have the potential to impact surface or groundwater to the DNR's 24-hour emergency spills hotline at 1-800-943-0003. More information about planning and prevention is available at dnr.wi.gov/topic/agbusiness/manurespills.html. A crash Friday afternoon on U.S. Highway 14 east of Richland Center resulted in injuries and road closure. The The Richland County Sheriff's Department reports that at approximately 1:30, first responders were dispatched to a two-vehicle crash on U.S. Highway 14 near Premier Co-op. The investigation showed that a straight truck crashed into the rear of a semi that was hauling corn. Highway 14 was completely blocked and both drivers sustained injuries. One driver was trapped in the vehicle and had to be extricated by the Richland Center Fire Department. One driver was transported by ambulance to the hospital. The second driver was transported by UW MedFlight. Highway 14 was closed for approximately 3 hours. At this time, the identities of the drivers are being withheld pending further investigation. Many consumers rent as an alternative to owning a home for various reasons. When looking for a place to rent, be cautious to avoid being scammed. Michelle Reinen is with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
We heard from a tenant who reported to us that the landlord of their newly rented apartment was not really a landlord at all. Before moving in, the tenant had paid the first month of rent, a security deposit, and signed a lease. Well, that seems pretty normal, but the tenant moved in at the beginning of the month and contacted the landlord later when they had a maintenance request to fix a water leak, and they received no response. Well, days after submitting that request, the apartment ceiling actually collapsed. And while no one was injured, the tenant again tried to contact the landlord and received no response. Local officials inspected the damage, and they deemed the property uninhabitable.
After trying to search for the so-called landlord, the news was not good for the tenant.
Now the tenant really needed to get a hold of the landlord, but they began searching the property records online to find out other contact information for the landlord, and they discovered that the property was actually listed as a short-term vacation rental on Airbnb and wasn't really a long-term housing rental for lease. So to their surprise, the landlord wasn't a landlord. The landlord was really a scammer, the person who entered into the lease with this tenant. And they had sublet the property without the knowledge or consent of the real owner. And that scammer took the tenant's money and, of course, that personal information in order to even originally rent the property. And the tenant was unable to recover their money or compensation for the damaged property that they had.
Before signing a lease, Michelle Reinen suggests doing research.
Yeah, we hope everyone runs internet searches for the landlord's name and property address and then investigate those results, really take a look at them. Then ask the landlord for contact information of past and current tenants, because then you can ask them about that renting experience, that referral type situation. But then search for the property on popular rental listing websites like rent.com, apartments.com, apartmentlist.com. There's many of them. If it appears there, the tenant can then confirm the landlord's listed contact information matches what they've received as the contact information and make sure things look like they align appropriately.
If you are a victim of a fake landlord scam or any scam, you can contact ADCAP's Consumer Protection Hotline by phone at 1-800-422-7128 or by email at datcphotline@wi.gov. The Justice on Wheels program takes the Wisconsin Supreme Court on the road and gives people outside Madison a chance to observe the court in action during an oral argument. Since 1993, the program has brought the court to 31 locations. On Monday, the Wisconsin Supreme Court heard oral arguments in two cases at the Richland County Courthouse in Richland Center as part of the court's Justice on Wheels outreach and education program. More than 10,000 people have witnessed or participated in Justice on Wheels. The proceedings attract a standing room only crowd. Before each argument, local attorneys provide the audience, including students and teachers, with an explanation of the case to be heard and a short civics lesson. In her welcome, Richland County Circuit Court Judge Lisa McDougall stated that even in a small town, bold ideas can leave a lasting mark. The day began by honoring retired Chief Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, who actually began her pass down law in the Richland County courtroom.
In 1968, I served as an assistant clerk of circuit court, a summer job, temporary, but that's, I think, what launched me into this legal career. And the then circuit clerk, Carl Gunnell, offered me a job, and I said yes. I was excited to have it.
Justice on Wheels gives students, teachers, and the general public an opportunity to observe the Supreme Court at work without having to travel. As part of the program, the justices recognized local students who participated in its essay contest. Ava Fargin, a fifth grader at Ithaca Schools, received a plaque for her first place entry. Sawyer Perkins and Lydia Hall, both students from the Kickapoo School District, were also recognized as runners-up. The justices then heard arguments on two cases. The first, Savannah Wren versus Columbia St. Mary's Hospital, Milwaukee, Incorporated, concerning the granting of immunity to healthcare providers for allegedly negligent actions at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic as an unconstitutional violation of an individual's right to a jury trial. Wren's child was stillborn in May of 2020. The second case, State versus KRC, which addresses Miranda rights when a student is questioned in a school resource officer and police in the resource officer's office. KRC is a 12-year-old student who was called to the resource officer's office for questioning with a police officer. Those in attendance saw how the state Supreme Court actually works. There are no shortcuts in the Justice on Wheels program, according to Ann Walsh Bradley.
This program, Justice on Wheels, started in 1993. The first sitting was in Green Bay, the second in Eau Claire, and the third, where I was a circuit court judge, in Wausau. But wherever we are around the state, we go once a year to bring the court to the people, and this is an example of that.
While no conclusions were drawn, a decision on the cases will be made.
The results will certainly be unfolded by June 30th, probably much earlier than that, but we have to have all of our cases out by the end of the term, which is June 30th. But there's a process. There will be the justices conferencing the case. One of the justices will be assigned to write the case, and then comments by other justices will be made regarding that distribution of a draft opinion, and then a dissent or a concurring opinion may unfold. So there's a lot of process yet between now and when the opinion is actually released to the public.
In the state's argument over Miranda rights in schools, it was mentioned that with more schools hiring resource officers, guidance may be needed in what Miranda looks like in schools. After serving 30 years on the Supreme Court, I was able to ask the former justice what it felt like to be on the other side as a spectator.
It was a unique experience. I'm used to being right in the middle, having served on the court for 30 years. So you can imagine that there is a lot of routine and habit in my attitude and in my behavior when I am at sitting of the court. That is, it's a routine in oral argument. And now it's on the other side of the bench. And it's the right place for me to be at this time in my life. But it's certainly is remarkable.
That is former Chief Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, a Richland Center native at Monday's Justice on Wheels at the Richland County Courthouse. SSM Health St. Clair Hospital Baraboo now offers certified nurse midwifery services as SSM Health expands its midwifery services to serve Baraboo and the surrounding areas. With this expansion, certified nurse midwives are now available for appointments and will provide labor and birth care in Baraboo. Midwives provide care to women during pregnancy, labor, birth, and the postpartum period. Certified nurse midwives also provide general health services, annual checkups, family planning, and treatment for common infections and health concerns. Certified nurse midwife services include personalized care tailored to each woman's health goals, emotional and physical support during labor and birth, education and guidance for self-care and newborn care, breastfeeding support and lactation counseling, routine women's health and gynecological care, and family planning and reproductive health services. If a patient chooses midwifery care for their pregnancy and delivery, midwives will provide prenatal care and attend their birth at the hospital. Midwives partner with SSM Health Physicians for added support. Three certified nurse midwives, Amy Fisher, Taylor Fry, and Brittany Schultz, are now serving patients at SSM Health Dean Medical Group, Baraboo. Patients often choose midwives because they like their approach to health care. Fisher stated, quote, "Midwifery focuses on wellness and preventative health. We consider patients' physical and emotional health and social relationships. And we work with them to optimize their health. Patients who want to empower themselves, educate themselves, and optimize their health should consider midwifery care for their gynecologic and obstetric needs. To schedule an appointment, call 608-294-6246. The Riverdale One Act Play has advanced to sectionals. This past Friday saw both Brookwood and Riverdale High Schools performing their one act plays for three judges in the District 10 Theater Festival. Both groups of young actors performed well and will advance to the Section 3 Festival in 2 weeks on Saturday, November 8th at DeForest High School. The deadline to participate in Wisconsin Extension's interactive program, Cultivating Your Farm's Future, is approaching. The program will help those who have questions about farm succession. Two workshop series will be held in the coming months, with the first coming soon. The deadline to register for the November-December workshop series is this Thursday. Family members do not have to be in the same household to be a part of the virtual workshops. You can register online at farms.extension.wisc.edu/programs/cultivating-your-farms-future. For more information, contact Joy Kirkpatrick by email at joy.kirkpatrick@wisc.edu or call 608-263-3485. Richland Center High School choirs will present a fall concert tonight at 7:30 in the high school auditorium. There are 30 freshman singers this year and 86 upperclassmen. The evening will include a mixture of old standards and new treasures. Cost of admission is $5.